Welcome back, everyone, to the Fastest Known Podcast, where very little shuck and jive. We get right down to brass tacks. We talk to some of the most interesting people in the sport. And right now, a very interesting person is online. I'm speaking with Brendan Leonard of SimiRad.com. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks for having me, Buzz. And thanks for calling me an interesting person. It's very nice of you.
Well, I could call you a top ultra runner, but I'm not sure if that'd be appropriate, would it?
That's definitely not accurate. So. Yeah.
Well, so why are you on this podcast, Brendan? You tell me. What do you think?
I have a new book out called "I Hate Running and You Can Too," which I sent you. So I think that's why. But yeah, I'm hoping it applies to people who are fast and people who are not as fast like myself. So I guess that would be the
indeed.
That's how I would pitch myself out to your podcast.
You got it, dude. I Hate Running and You Can Do. It came out March 16th. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I think it's an amazing book. And I'm going to write a quick book review and put it on the website, publish it as one of the articles. So people, well, it's just a few thoughts I have on it, but mainly it's your illustrations. I want to put a lot of your illustrations in it because we're doing a podcast. We're doing verbal. Well, your illustrations to me are absolutely brilliant. I'm going to tell you, we'll just kick it off by saying how I started following you. And I should note, you are and have been the only blog, the only newsletter I subscribe to. You know, there's tons of stuff out there. I don't subscribe to anyone. I subscribe to SimiRad.com. That will be in the written show notes in case anyone wants to follow what I'm doing. And I saw an illustration you did a few years ago, and it was titled "Ultra Running: When There Isn't Enough Fuck This Shit in Your Life."
Yeah, that was, I made this series of motivational posters where there used to be this thing you could generate these posters online. You know, it's like the old ones that say like teamwork, and it's like a photo of a bunch of hands in the middle. And they used to be popular in offices. And there was a website called despair.com that would do, I think they still do them, but they do all these like anti-motivational posters, and they had a generator where you could make your own. And I used that for some mountaineering ones that I did. And then I had to make up my own ultra running ones. But they were just trying to find some essential truths, you know, that everybody goes through. And yeah, when you need more fuck this shit in your life is pretty much I think, a common thing for a lot of ultra runners.
So, yeah, well, I've been doing this a long time, literally, let's see, where are we now? 50 years, over 53 years ago was when I did my first ultra distance. And I think you uncommonly hit the nail on the head. When I'm reading other media, it's like, what? Really? I don't think people really think that way. You know, you read something in the media about mountaineers conquering the mountain. I have never heard a climber in my life say they conquered a mountain, right? And in ultra runners, everyone just say, oh yeah, I just flashed that. I just cruised it. People don't usually say that. And so I think you are a voice of the sport more than most people are.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah. I think I spent a lot of time thinking about what are all the things that we have in common and what can bring us together, you know, these sentiments and stuff like that. And, you know, things from like bad attitudes, procrastinating things, you know, we all have bad days no matter how fast or slow we are. And the distance is always the same no matter what. The time it takes you to get through it is definitely different for people. But yeah, I think there's a lot more people who do ultra distances who don't have a chance at winning the race than there are that do have a chance of winning the race, if that makes sense, you know?
Well, statistically, this is factual.
Yes, for sure. I mean, people like me are not showing up at a 100-mile race going, okay, I'm going to look at all my competition here and, you know, stare them down and think about how I'm going to beat them. It's like, I don't even have that in my... I started a race in North Carolina a couple of years ago with a friend who's really fast, and he ended up having some trouble, but still got like third or fourth in the race. But he was leading for the first 70 miles. And right at the beginning, right before we're about to start, and there's only about 80 people in the whole race, I said, Canyon, do you want to run the first like 15 feet together? And he started laughing, and we did not run the first 15 feet together. I literally took off last, and he was at the front just bombing, you know, and, but
so yeah. you couldn't manage 15 feet. That was stretching it too much.
Well, I didn't even want to stand up front by him, you know, and get in everybody's way. It was just like, if I did that, I'd get carried away and I would run fast for like 5 miles and then I'd be dead. And, you know, so I was like, I'm just going to start off slow and, you know, continue to move slowly and finish the race. So
the old saying, start off slowly, then taper off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I always, my saying in my head is, you're not a cheetah, you're a freight train. You know, that's what I think of. Like, you need momentum, right? Not speed. So
you need momentum. Well, you have, and you just, you know, kidding aside, you are entirely credible in the sport. You have an FKT on the site, indeed, that you established last October 7th, the Rattlesnake Creek Five Peaks Loop in Montana. And this, you created the route yourself, 18 hours plus. That's a long day out there, Brendan. So what prompted you to go after or establish this FKT?
Honestly, it was, you know, 2020. It was, no one was doing races, so we couldn't really come together. And I had, you know, the whole summer people were doing things that were FKTs, you know, from mostly, you know, very high level athletes. And I thought the only way I'm ever going to get an FKT is if I make something up that's never been done. But I thought it would be cool to do something that was unique enough or challenging enough that other people would actually attempt it. And because I am not fast, so I thought, what if I just create a route and then people have fun doing this route that I put on the FKT website? I don't care if my name's ever on it, really, you know, like it's nice to have established it, but it'd be fun for more people to try it. So I did. And yeah, it was a long day out. I was surprised how long it took me. I remember telling my wife, Hillary, when I left in the morning, like, I should be done by like 10 o'clock or something like that, I think, you know. And I had underestimated both the mileage and the elevation gain slightly, but more so I underestimated my fitness. So I once I got back into cell phone service on the top of the fourth peak out of five, I texted her and said, hey, it's going to be like a lot later than I thought. And, it was a great experience. I mean, it was such a fun day just to be out there for that long, because I'd spent most of the pandemic with a sort of, I would say COVID induced agoraphobia, you know, where it wasn't like traveling, like wasn't going into the mountains very much just because of the, you know, just because of everything going on. It just didn't feel right. So it was nice to have one really big, huge day. And I actually ran into a friend yesterday on the bike path when I was running, who's a younger, faster guy. And he said, I think I'm going to give that a try this year. And I said, oh, you absolutely should. You will destroy that time, you know, and that'll be fantastic. So I hope more people do it.
A great attitude. This is fantastic. Like you said, you finished at 2:15 in the morning, but so what? You know, you had a headlamp, you had cell phone covered, so your wife didn't call the sheriff. Yeah, all good. And the old tried and true FKT technique is, if you can't be the fastest, be the first.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's what draws me to it. And like the things that I enjoy most about the website is not trying to figure out who would ever, like, if you could possibly go faster than somebody, but looking around at all the interesting things that people are doing. And you and I have talked about this, like, you know, there's things on islands, there's things in probably almost all the states at this point, but like the stair the Stairs Ultra Marathon in Pittsburgh that has like 7,400 feet of elevation gain. That's fascinating to me. The guy who ran and connected all the PATH train stations in New Jersey and New York, like that's fun. Those are cool things. So it's cool to just put something up there and have an idea for an adventure that other people can do because they have the, you know, the beta, which I think is the one of the most exciting things about the FKT site to me.
Thank you. Good point. I feel the same way. It's essentially a bucket list. You can cruise the site. You're going to go visit a different place. You live in Missoula, Montana. So someone could see your route that you put up here, say, hey, I'll give that a go. And that will be linked in the written show notes. You wrote a really fun full-length report, which will also be linked through your trip report if someone wants to follow up on the Rattlesnake Loop. But back to your credibility here. I mean, you have run a marathon distance 52 times once per week a few years ago. You bicycled across America. You finished 300 milers, including Run Rabbit Run, which you've made you didn't mention this, but I know you made a really good video on this for REI.
Yeah. It's called How to Run 100 Miles. Which I thought was just a clever title, but apparently people do click on it thinking it's an instructional video, and it is not. I wanted to tell my friend Jason's story, his life story, which is all about persistence. And he and I had been starting into ultra marathons and, getting into bigger and bigger distances. And we said, well, let's sign up for 100. And that's what we signed up for. And, it was amazing. I think, I would not advise anyone try to produce and direct a film while they're also trying to run their first 100-mile race. But I survived both. And, we were making the film for a client, I guess you'd say, for REI, or REI paid for it is another way to look at it. But I really just wanted Jason's mom to like the film, and, she did. So, it's gotten quite a bit of mileage, quite a bit of views on YouTube. And it's been super cool to be able to share his story with so many people, because most of the time you're only able to tell a friend's story like one person at a time. You know, you'll say, you know, you would really love to hang out with my friend Bob. You guys would really get along. And I find myself telling so many people about Jason. I figured, you know what, this doesn't scale. I think I could do better. And if I just put his story into a film, more people would find out about him. So it works for that. And it was fun to try to do that.
Wow. Well, I'm going to put a link to How to Run 100 Miles in the written show notes if someone wants to track down that video. It's really good. I mean, it's like you said, it bounced around the internet. It probably still is. Because I think as we started off this conversation by saying, you speak for most people in the sport. They're not out conquering anything. There's not a lot of fame and glory in ultra running. And you kind of nail it. So I'll finish up your last sport highlight in your written bio. Have eaten pizza in 38 states and 12 countries.
Yes. I wonder where you're reading this bio from. Is that from my website? Because
no,
I create a bunch of different... Oh, okay. Yeah, it's like a way of, you know, like people make lists of things like visiting every courthouse in every capital in every state or something like that, or visiting every state. And I thought, well, I could probably do, you know, I could probably try to do pizza in every state. And a friend of mine and I have this ongoing conversation of pizza and what constitutes a pizza, you know, is like Middle Eastern flatbread that does have cheese on it, but no tomato sauce. Or if it has tomatoes, is that pizza? And, you know, I think pizza is this, it's a global thing at this point. I've had pizza in many, many countries, including
12.
Yeah.
According to your,
yes. Yeah. Including durian pizza in China, pizza with durian fruit on it. And,
oh, wait a minute. No, that's,
yeah.
If people do not know what a durian is, they're in for a big surprise.
Yeah. And, it's this fruit, that's in, in Asia. I think just sort of Southeast Asia or Eastern Asia. Maybe it's all over China, but it smells so bad, quote unquote bad. It's an acquired taste. But there are certain countries that you cannot eat it on public transportation. It's illegal. And when I was in China for a film festival, and the young man leading me around, Jerry, said, "I know you love pizza. We're going to go get durian pizza." And I said, "Great."
Looking
at the menu, and he goes, "So there's like scales of how intense the durian is from 1 to 5. I think we need to set you at like 1. And I said, that's perfect, man. You know, but it is truly all over the place. You know, you like travel to all these European countries and you'll find that there's like a pizza and kebab stand everywhere, you know, and it's like pizza is probably, I would say it hasn't probably ruined very many people's lives despite spreading all over the globe, you know, and I think it's a better invention than the internet in that sense. You know what I mean?
Wow. Okay.
This is. Yeah.
Right. And you heard it first here. Okay, listeners, you heard it first here on the Fastest Known Podcast. Pizza is a better invention than the internet. Can this be disputed? Right.
I mean, probably, right? But like, if I have a really bad day, sometimes I go, well, at least I didn't invent Facebook. That would feel really bad. You know, my problems are very small compared to, I mean, I wouldn't be able to sleep if I were Mark Zuckerberg, but, you know, anyway.
Wow. Well, this is interesting because anytime you make a list, like you made a list of how many countries you've eaten pizza and you have to define what a pizza is. So on fastestknowntime.com, we are continually teasing that one apart. This week, in fact, we're having this big internal discussion on the presidential traverse in New Hampshire, where a really good guy, really good runner just established a new FKT, but he did it by going in the late winter on top of the snow, and the snow is very firm, rather than running on the trail where the rocky trail actually can slow you down. So oddly, paradoxically, he possibly faster conditions going on the snow than in summer. So we're, you know, hashing out what to do about that. But fortunately, it did not involve eating a durian.
Yeah, you know, I am new to this idea. A friend of mine who's lived here for several years told me that about our like local stuff. He was like, yeah, a lot of the fastest times fall here in the winter because, you know, you're actually able to bomb downhill faster in micro spikes or what have you, as opposed to going down rocky trails. So that's interesting. What was the actual decision?
I think we're 95% there. I think we're going to flag it, because we could go in a little rabbit hole, but you asked a very good question. We just spent like a couple hours on this discussion. So I will just share with everybody how the internal thinking goes on things like this, which is to create a level and fair playing field. And then an environmental consideration is important, which is you have to stay on the trail. Mm-hmm. That's key. Because if you cut a switchback or anything like that, you're stepping on alpine tundra. You don't want to do that. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Trail runners, go as fast as you can, but we don't litter, right? We don't step on alpine tundra. We don't break laws. We may be complete jerks, but we don't do things like that. Mm-hmm. Now, he did it in the winter, so he was not stepping on any alpine tundra, but that meant he could not do switchbacks a little bit. He was following a boot track, which naturally didn't follow the trail. So his overall distance was slightly shorter than the previous FKT holder.
Huh.
See? Yeah, right. It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah. How much was the difference?
He was 1 mile slower than the previous person.
Okay.
17.68. I mean, I have it right here. I mean, I want to just bore you to death. 17.68 miles versus 18.71 miles. I mean, this is what we do. I'm not making it up. I wish I was making it up. And the next closest was 17.99 miles compared with 17.68 miles. See what I mean? So there was no mathematical formula that we could objectively apply to solve the situation. I would like to make this black and white. Here's the formula. You're either on one side of it or you're not.
Yeah.
You're unable to do a clear mathematical formula. So I had to go back to a judgment call. What is in the best interests of everybody?
Yeah. Well, that's a really interesting thought and conversation to get
into. Well, if you'd like to volunteer with FAST, there's some job openings here. you could become a podcast host. you are a podcast host, actually. You're on, what's the name of the podcast that you co-host on?
Off the Couch. Yeah. Off the Couch. I have a hard enough time dedicating a couple episodes a week a month to that. Like showing up for those. So, I appreciate it, but I got this other thing going on. I think I might stick with, and okay. I'm still a Patreon donor for Fastest Known Time. I think that's where I can contribute the most.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for doing that. In fact, I am a Patreon donor to semirad.com. So just to stay with that a minute, I think people should be aware that this to a certain degree is how it works. You are making a business. You're making a living. You're providing great content. You're providing a great service. And in the age of the internet, you have to figure out how to monetize it so you can keep doing it. It's as simple as that. You're not going to volunteer your time. Maybe you would, but your wife Hillary would throw you out. So you have to monetize it. That's totally legit. And so people, I'm doing a little essay here, have to realize the internet is never free. You made that joke about Facebook, and they're, of course, making billions of dollars selling you data, feeding you ads, things like that. And so it's never free. Someone is always monetizing it somewhere. So if you find something you like, whether it's semirad.com or fastestknowntime.com, kick in a little bit, please. That's what I do. That's what you are doing. And so keep in mind, it's never free. So please value what you want to see stick around. Thank you for the little editorial comment there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think people say, like, where's the best place to buy your book? And I always say, buy it from the bookstore you want to close the least. So if you have a bookstore in your town and you don't want it to close, buy it there. You know, if you want to save $2, and if you love Amazon, buy it from Amazon. But I think about that, like, you know, I mean, yeah, if the finances don't work out for me, I get a real job, you know, and the art goes away, you know, this continual feed of free stuff that gets pumped out on a weekly basis is like, man, you know, it's fun, but I got to eat too. So it's like, and I have a great time with Patreon. I'm a donor to, I think, like 12 different people's, Patreons, including Fastest Known Time, but also like Trail Sisters. That's how they make a chunk of money. And I think it's just a great way to be able to put your money where your mouth is.
Good call. You're doing a good job. You are kicking out the content. I get it. Friday inspiration in my email box every Friday. So a definite plug, unabashed plug, semirad.com. It's a semi-rad.com, I should say. And the illustrations are just killer. And coming back to the topic, your book.
Yeah.
So the title kind of says a lot right here. I hate running and you can too. So it's a tongue-in-cheek title. It's not like, you know, kick ass. You know, it's not this total upbeat thing. It's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But as I started to peruse it, Brendan, this is one of the best books I've ever read about running. I can just flat out say this. And I've seen a few. I've got, oh my gosh, of course, I've got signed copies of Scott Jurek's two books, Chrissy Mayles, Anish Heather Anderson, Travis Macy. Oops, I shouldn't have started this thread because I'm leaving out friends of mine who have written books on running, and now I can't remember all. Sorry about that. I shouldn't have said anything. But my point, David Horton, I just thought of him. But my point is, I think next to Chris's book, Born to Run, which is probably the best, most influential book ever written about running.
Yeah.
I Hate Running is probably the second best book I've ever seen. It's really, really good.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think I wanted to like try to convince people they could do it if they weren't already doing it, if they were curious, you know, or if they were thinking about, could I do like the couch to 5K thing? But I also wanted to try to capture some of the sentiments that we have as people who have run for years and years and years, and help people explain that to their friends and family, because anybody who runs ultra distances, fastest known times, marathons, anything like that, I think we're all the weird person at the office or in the family, you know, and a lot of times we struggle with how to explain that to people, like, why would you do something like that? So it's fun to like try to break it down to more simple terms and, you know, give it to people. And I hope that longtime runners too will look at it and go, oh, this graph right here on page, whatever, 87, I showed this to my family, you know, and they get it now, or they kind of understand me. So, I hope so. And I agree with what you said, like Born to Run definitely was a huge influence on me, years ago. And I mean, there's The Happy Runner also, by David Roach. Yep.
Oh, and good point.
The Oatmeal's book, The Terrible and Wonderful Reasons Why I Run Long Distances. Those are in my Relentless Forward Progress by Brian Powell. Those are all super influential. Yeah. Look at me. I'm just like selling.
These are people are getting mad at me because I forgot to mention their book a minute ago.
No, but there's so many. And I think a lot of them, I think where I saw I could come in was sort of, there's a lot of memoirs by really successful runners, which are inspiring, like Scott Jurek, you know, of course, and Jenny Jurek, their book North, or like Dean Karnazes or all the people who are fast marathoners. But you know, that's one way to inspire people. And I thought, gosh, how can we get in at a lower level, you know, and show people that it's possible. And I think that's what I was trying to do, I guess.
You did it. So I will do a so-called book review, which means I will say a few worthless bits of tripe that don't really mean anything, and print a bunch of your illustrations, which I think do mean something. Your illustrations, let's take a crack at it right now. This is tough. We're going to attempt the verbal description of a visual item. Page 100, a chart titled People Who Get to Decide What the Point of All Your Running Is. Do you remember this one?
Yep, so there's I'm looking a circle. At it. Yeah,
it's a pie graph. It's a pie chart, classic pie chart. And blue is you. You're the one who gets to decide the point. And red is other people who get to decide the point of your running. And the entire pie chart is blue. There isn't any red. Boom, right? A picture is worth a thousand words.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the beautiful thing about running? Is it's just a hobby that you can do and you don't have to like report to anyone or, you know, tell anyone how it's going. You can just do it for you and decide what you want to do it for. And you can go and do that. That's what I think is great about it. But yeah, these charts, I always like, there's lots of different ways to draw charts. And there are, you know, if you really were going to get into like academic, really, really well put together charts, you would get a little beyond what I do. But I think the most important thing is that people understand them, whether or not they went to, like they took a statistics course within the last 5 years. And, you know, there's so many different charts. Every once in a while, someone will, you know, comment on one of my Instagram things and be like, you didn't label the y-axis. And I'm like, it's because it's not important for this. Like, I'm literally saying that, you know, dogs have no concept of time, which is, you know, proven. Like, we don't need to get it like, oh my God. So, so yeah, like it's, you want people to be able to take a look at it in 5 seconds and go, oh, I get that I get what that means, you know? So the pie chart's like the easiest way to do that. But yeah.
Good. And 5 seconds is indeed my attention span. So this works great for me.
I think we have less than that nowadays, you know, it's like maybe 3. So yeah, you can't be making things super complicated. And I've realized that, like, I put together complicated charts and gone, yeah, that's not going to work. People aren't going to react to that because they literally do not think they have time, or they don't want to spend that much time with it before they scroll on to the next thing. So it's an interesting time to be trying to create stuff, for sure.
Well, your charts will not apparently appear in the New York Times or the Washington Post, but they definitely do appear on a regular basis in Outside Magazine. So you've been working at this, Brendan. You're one of these people who is born to write. You know what I mean? So other people might be okay at it. They might want to do it. But someone like you, you have to do it. And you've been working truly hard at this for decades. And could we say that you are now successful? I mean, you got these books out. You have hopefully enough people. You could use more Patreon subscribers. And Outside, which has got a pretty big reach, you're a regular columnist there. Could we say you've made it?
You know, it's funny. I asked that question of somebody else, the ginger runner, Ethan Newberry, and he kind of just shot it back at me like, really? Like, whoever makes it? You know, and I was like, yeah, you're right. And that's a good point. But yeah, man, I mean, like, I was able to, in 2012, I quit my last day job, my last real job, where I was doing remote copywriting work for IBM, but I was able to go full on in adventure writing because I had a regular gig with Adventure Journal where I thought I could live at basically, I could survive off of what I was making per month there. And if with a few more gigs, I could probably make it okay. And I remember the day I shipped my computer back to IBM, my work computer. And it was just like I was in Salt Lake. I was living in my van, you know, visiting a friend, and I shipped it. And I just thought, this is potentially a massive, massive mistake. And I went to my friend's house. I was crashing on his couch at Chris, and he came home from work. He worked at Black Diamond at the time. And he said, "What'd you do today?" And I go, "Well, I quit my job." And he goes, "Man, congratulations. That is so awesome." You know, and I was worried for a few months, and then things came together to the point where I was able to make enough of a living. Like, you're scratching a living out, but it's amazing. So I think, like, I've been successful since that day, I guess, to me. So yeah, you always think like, I wonder what that'd be like to have a New York Times best-selling book or whatever. And then you start to realize that A, that may never happen, but B, there's like, if you connect with people and you give people what I think of as sort of digital greeting cards to send to each other, and you know, connect with their friends over some of the stuff you make, that's really successful. And if you can pay rent, that's great too. So obviously if I couldn't pay rent, I would stop doing it. But yeah, it's been, I wouldn't say beyond my wildest dreams, because my wildest dreams are probably like way more, like, maybe I'd have a Tesla. I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, man, you know, I can, like, I have an actual office now, which is a huge thing for me. It's one room with all my crap in it. So I don't know what the mark is, but I think you always keep chasing it and trying to get better. You know, I think about it in running terms. When we have guests on our show, it's not really, it's people from all parts of, you know, the culture, and all different rates of, or all different speeds and all different levels of success. And one of the questions I like to ask, if we have time, is, how are you getting better as a runner if you're not with, you know, how are you getting better as a runner, but not necessarily getting faster? You know, I think there's one way to look at running is like, I need to get X time in X race, or I need to qualify for the Boston Marathon or something like that. But as we get older, those things start to slip away a little bit, and you're like, well, maybe I'll never be that fast. And I think, like, okay, well, how are you continuing to find goals and improving? Maybe you're just improving as a person through running, you know? So I like to ask people that question to find that out from people, because getting faster is one thing, but I don't think it's the only thing. And I think the more interesting things to me are the things that aren't just getting faster. So yeah, that's, is that successful? What is success? I think is a thing you continually, hopefully recalibrate throughout life, I guess.
Wow. I'm glad I asked that question. I'm glad you answered it. I'm furiously trying to scribble these notes down so I could learn from this a little bit. Hopefully I can learn from this a little bit. Good job, Brendan.
Oh, thanks.
That's well done. I think that's what great humor, you have a lot of humor in what you do, obviously. That's what great humor always contains, is deep wisdom. It's funny when it's partially true, right?
Oh,
when
yeah.
We're seeing from a different perspective. I mean, just I've always found the Three Stooges when I was a kid growing up. I didn't think they were funny at all. I didn't really like it. When you have to honor your topic, you have to respect your topic, and then there's wisdom to be had in taking that offhanded perspective. It can be insightful, if not transcendent.
Yeah, I wonder if you and I should talk about why we don't think the Three Stooges are funny, because I didn't, as a kid either, I just didn't get it. You know, it just, this was not fun to me. I don't know why.
But like, I hesitate to say that because I thought I was the only one who thought that. They just grossed me out. It's like, what is this? I couldn't stand it. So,
yeah, I know. Well, we have that in common for sure. But yeah, it wasn't like this is not my experience. I don't want people to jab me in the eye and think it's funny. You know? I think there was too much empathy for Larry, Moe, and Curly. Like, they were always just like smacking each other and stuff, and I just didn't get it. But yeah, I mean, I think like most good humor does get to the heart of somebody's experience, and I think most of the time, my rule, and this is as much to avoid arguing with people on the internet than anything, is it's okay to make fun of us. It is not okay to make fun of them in what I do, because I just think it, like, if you make fun of us and say, aren't ultra runners like ridiculous people who do this really dumb thing, that brings us together as ultra runners. But if you say, aren't ultra runners idiots? Look at those morons doing this stuff. I can't believe someone would spend 6 months training for a race so they could run for 24 to 30 hours straight. That's so stupid. Then you're just making fun of people and splitting us apart. So like, what's the point of that? And that basically is the fuel that Twitter runs on. I think a lot of times, is just people jabbing at each other. Yeah. And it's like, it's not, we don't need more of that right now. At least I don't need more of it. Maybe some people do, but I feel like it's a time where we can work on other things.
Coming together is way better.
Yeah.
And you moved apart, at least for me. You were living a long time in Denver, of course. Now you moved up to Missoula, Montana. And apparently your wife, Hillary, is she happy up there? Does she say, oh my gosh, my husband, he's a romantic, he's a writer, you know, I got to put up with this. So Montana's beautiful. Not saying it's not, particularly in July and August, but you know, here it is March. Is it still reasonable being up there?
Oh yeah. I'm not supposed to talk about it, that it's nice here.
Right.
That I'm not supposed to say anything positive about this area, but yeah, Denver was actually a little warm for me for many years. Oh. I'm just like, I don't function super well in heat and the dry air. So it's high, it's dry. It just like, I didn't, the climate is a little better for me. The winter is going to be longer for sure. But I always thought of Denver as, it's a great city. I love it so much. But I always think of it as a place where you can visit winter most of the year. You know, you can drive an hour and a half and be in like full on winter. But sometimes you come back down in February and you're like, hey, do you want to sit outside while we eat burritos? Cause it's that warm. So yeah. And really, if we had a dream, like, I would say we are here more for Hillary than me. I would love to live in like New York, Detroit, Seattle, you know, bigger city, and not necessarily need to be close to the mountains as much. But, or at least try that. But I think we're definitely both loving access to trails and stuff like that. I sometimes think, I don't know if I need to have the mountains in my life so much, but I also question how long I would last if I were to spend, you know, a couple of years in the flatlands of my youth, and try to move back there and try to find fun. But it could be an interesting experiment.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You were in Michigan for quite a while last year, right? Like,
I was.
You seem to find a lot of stuff to do, if I can believe your Strava. Which made it look pretty. Yeah, I was like, God, Buzz is making this look pretty fun. Maybe I could get back there.
Well, thank you very much. Well, it's at an easy metric on that one, which is I could train on running. And if I had hired David Roach as a coach, who's extremely good on all levels, as you know, technically and metaphysically. And I did everything he said for 2 years. 2 years later, I would be worse than I am now. That's the age game that I'm playing. Climbing, biking, running, scrambling, etc. So I'm now paddling. I took up surf ski. I'm getting better. So I've got a sport that I'm improving at, which is kind of fun. So I go back to Michigan. We got the big blue water, the big lake. And I go out there in these pretty good waves, and I could do – I've done up to 35 miles a day, and I've – had some pretty good surfing runs. So I have a sport that I'm actually improving at. It's clean air. It's clean water. It's good food.
Yeah. Yeah. So who knows, you know, like how long does the obsession with vertical terrain last, you know? But yeah, there's different. And the Midwest is very underreported how cool some of the adventures you can have there, you know, especially Michigan. Like people don't know about the UP, you know, all these other crazy things. We focus a lot of attention on Utah and the Rockies and the Sierras and stuff. We don't hear about the Midwest as much, but it's there, as you know.
You are correct. And we have reserved our space in the ferry to Isle Royale.
Oh, really?
Second week in July, which is the least visited by far national park in the entire national park system. More people visit supposedly Yellowstone in 1 day than visit Isle Royale in an entire year. Well, it's a 4-hour ferry ride just to get to it.
It only goes like twice a week too, right?
Now it's a little bit more than that.
You know, okay.
Fit that 10,000 people per year in. So that's what's next for me. So what's next for you? This is my standard question, by the way. What's next, whether that's writing, running, or any other endeavor you'd like to share, Brendan?
Boy, yeah. I just continue the treadmill of creating things on a weekly basis. So right now I'm trying to argue that Balzac's coffee consumption in the 19th century was not as impressive as people believe, but that'll be on my blog tomorrow. But yeah, race wise, I was signed up for the CCC in Chamonix. And
oh, really?
Yeah, I was signed up last year and it was postponed. And this year I'm like kind of in a holding pattern. And I think it might just be better to put it off another year if I can. I'm really excited for things to start opening up again and start to get together with people and race and volunteer and do all sorts of things. I'm signed up for the Rut 50K in September here in Montana, which will be the steepest race I've ever done, I think. So that'll be awesome. And as things open up and as we start to all get vaccinated, I think there'll be more fun things. And I'm trying to hopefully put together sort of a book tour for the late fall. If we're gathering in person by then. So try to get to a bunch of different cities and just meet people and hang out and talk about running and maybe sign some books too. So hopefully that's excellent. Able to happen. Yeah.
Good call. CCC. It's quite the circus there. It's totally different than anything that takes place anywhere in North America. So I recommend it once in a career just to see the scene. It's totally unique. And then the other end of the spectrum is the Rut.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of just go opposite that. So good for you. But the book tour, if this book tour comes to your city, dear listener, go attend it. Because Brendan, I've seen you speak, of course, here in Boulder at Neptune Mountaineering. You're good. Mm-hmm. Put on a show. And that's what, you know, you take your craft seriously. You don't just show up like a pro runner and say, yeah, I'm cool. Look at me. You work at it. You present good content.
Maybe it's because I'm not cool like pro runners are. Get to work harder. You're not going to see me because I'm cool. So let me show you what I put together. Yeah, that's funny.
I hope to hear about your book tour. And again, I Hate Running and You Can Too. Go to the written show notes for a link to purchase it. Purchase it at your local bookstore if possible, the one you don't want to close.
Yeah.
Brendan, I really, really agree. It's great to talk virtually online, but I do hope I see you in person sometime.
Awesome. Me too. Thanks for having me, Buzz.